Warning: The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of unprotected talk, borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
My mother had a terrible childhood. She was abandoned by her parents. She was rejected by her grandparents. She was literally working as a housemaid at the age of 14. And she told me every day, you've got to get up and fight for what you believe in, no matter how hard it is. And I think about her a lot. I miss her a lot. I wish she were here with me. And I remember that. I don't want to just fight for me. I can have a perfectly fine life not being president. I'm going to fight for all the people like my mother who need somebody in their corner. And they need a leader who cares about them again. So that's what I'm going to try to do.
She wrecked the world, and now she's crying about her deceased mother. Welcome to the Savage Nation. And the stooge at ABC doesn't ask her one question about, are you embarrassed by the fact that your Arab Spring policy has destroyed the Middle East and has caused this humanitarian crisis? Not one word. So we're focused now on Hillary Clinton. Did she sell or not sell? That's not the point. The stooges at ABC didn't ask her the real questions. That's the point. She also gave a throw at the Israel crowd to show that she's with the Jews. Listen to the next one.
Israel has every reason to be alarmed by a regime that both denies its existence and seeks its destruction. I would not support this agreement for one second if I thought it put Israel in greater danger. I believe in my core that Israel and America must stand side by side, and I will always stand by Israel's right to defend itself, as I always have.
Yeah, all right, sure.
I believe this deal before. And a joint.
All right, turn it off. Right. She wouldn't support it for a minute if she thought it put Israel in danger. Oh, not for a minute. Everyone who studied it knows it puts Israel in danger. In fact, the chief liar, the raghead over there in Iran, said death to Israel. Israel won't exist in 25 years. I guess Hillary didn't read the morning papers. Okay, but this is the story. They get $150 billion, a pathway to a nuclear weapon, the right to develop missiles, and we didn't even get one hostage released. How's that for a negotiation, Hillary? How is that for negotiation, Hillary? So we need to talk about these things today. And I have to ask you a really hard question. Is Israel the real problem? Now I'll ask you a harder question on the Savage Nation, which will not be picked up by anyone in the media, but you, the listeners, listen for a reason. Should the U.S. continue to support Israel? Why or why not? I mean, that's the core of the question. Because the left, under Obama, Obama's worldview is that Israel has fundamentally become the Cuba of Russia. I don't know if you understand that. Israel is America's Cuba, a Cold War relic. That we supported it after World War II because of what happened in the Holocaust. And that was fine, and that was that time. But the world has changed. The Jewish people are not as influential as they once were. The money is where the Muslims are. There are more numerous Muslims than Jews. And given that there's no conscience, or shall I say character, in a man like Obama and his pack of jackals, they go where the power and money is, so they've aligned themselves with the Arabs and the Muslim power. And they think that Israel's an expendable issue. But I ask those of you out there who think that Israel is the primary issue to ask yourself one question. Attention, anti-Zionists. What about all the other conflicts on the earth between Muslims and their neighbors? Do you know of them? You haven't read about them in the New York Times, like Kashmir, where Muslims have been fighting India, or the Muslim problem in the belly of China, or the Muslim problem with Russia, or the ongoing Muslim slaughter amongst the Moros in the Philippines? How come you don't know about those issues? So many of you would say, oh, well, you know, if you gave Israel to the Arabs, the world would be at peace. That's because you're ignorant of history, just as you are ignorant of American politics. But I want to go now to the history of the Jewish people, because many of you don't even understand what this is about. And you say, who cares about Israel? It's just a little nation in the middle of all that. Give the Muslims what they want and the world will be at peace. We can party on, take our drugs and have drug, sex, and rock and roll forever. So who are the Jews? Where do they come from? Well, they were once called Hebrews. We know that the Jewish people are Semitic. And they were not that important, by the way, in the ancient times. The importance of the Jewish people appeared in the latter history of the world. We know for sure they were settled in Judea long before 1000 B.C. And their capital city after that settlement was Jerusalem. We also know that the history of the Jewish people is interwoven with that of the great empires on either side of them. Egypt to the south, and then the moving, changing, shifting sands known as the empires of Syria, Assyria, and Babylon to the north. And why are the Jews so important in the world today? It's because that the ancient Jewish people produced a written literature, a world history, a collection of laws, chronicles, psalms, books of wisdom, poetry and fiction, and political utterances, which became known amongst Christians as the Old Testament, the Hebrew Bible. The atheists consider this to be sheer literature. The Jewish people consider it to be the Word of God. All we know for sure is that this literature appeared in history in the 4th or 5th century B.C. 4th or 5th century B.C. Consider it what I just said, or consider it the Word of God. What it is, a collection of literature, world history, laws, chronicles, psalms, books of wisdom, poetry and fiction, political utterances, all in the Old Testament, which I read somewhat on the Savage Nation. And the Christian Bible is based, as you know, upon this Bible, the Old Testament. The Quran is based largely upon the Jewish Bible, the Old Testament. Almost all of the laws that Muslims follow are based upon the Old Testament. They're almost identical. And where did this literature come from? Well, whether it's from God himself or from the prophets or, how I just say, writers, all we know is that this collection of literature was put together first in Babylon. And I'm not going to go into the history of Babylon and what happened in Babylon. I'm not going to talk about Cyrus, who he was and how he took Babylon in 538 B.C. And Cyrus released the Jews from bondage in Babylon because the Jewish people had been sent there. Jerusalem had been sacked and burned, and the remnant of the Jewish people was carried off as captives to Babylon. And they stayed there as captives in Babylon until Cyrus took Babylon in 538 B.C., and he released all of the Jews, and he sent them back to resettle their country and rebuild the walls and temple of Jerusalem. And then suddenly the civilization of the Jewish people began. At that time, by the way, the Bible of the Jewish people consisted only of the first five books of the Old Testament as we know it. Five books of the Old Testament. And what's interesting about that is that when you look at the African tribe that claims to have been Jewish, that they are Jewish, they only follow the first five books of Moses, these five books. Did you know that? Do you know about those people, the black Africans, who were resettled in Israel in the 19... I don't know when it was, but they were picked up whole, and they were saved from Africa and brought to Israel. They make amongst some of the finest soldiers in Israel, by the way, from those people. But they only respect the first five books of Moses, the Old Testament, as we know it. Now, we in the West have the fantasies of the creation of the world, of Adam and Eve, the flood. That's how the Bible begins. Now, it's possible these things happened. Possible there was a flood. I mean, there could have been global warming then, caused by the foul gases emitted by camels, which immediately and suddenly shrank all the glaciers and caused the flood. We don't know. We have to go to an expert on this, such as the Pope or Al Gore or Barack Obama. They would know the truth of this because they have access to scientific instrumentation that we, the ordinary people, don't know about. So it could be the gases of the camels and the donkeys in the Old Testament time were so hot that they suddenly melted the northern ice cap, and we had the flood, Noah's flood. But in the ancient books, there was the stories of Moses, Samson. But what you don't know about the stories of Moses and Samson is that they're not original. They were ripoffs because there were Sumerian and Babylonian parallels. I mean, I have to tell you that as a writer and as a talk show host. You have to understand that ideas are somewhat shared. You may think that Samson and Moses were original to the Jewish people. But nah, not really. They were part of the legends of the Semitic peoples at that time, and they have Sumerian and Babylonian parallels. Then there was Abraham. Probably lived as early as the days of Hammurabi in Babylon. Abraham was a Semitic nomad, very much like a Bedouin. He was the patriarch. And then you have to go back to the story of his wanderings and the stories of his sons and grandchildren and how they became captive in the land of Egypt. We know that Abraham traveled through Canaan, and the God of Abraham, says the Bible story, promised this land of prosperous cities to him and to his children only. And finally, after a long sojourn in Egypt, and after 40 years of wandering in the wilderness under the leadership of Moses, the children of Abraham, now comprising of 12 tribes, invaded the land of Canaan from the Arabian deserts to the east. This likely occurred between 1600 B.C. and 1300 B.C. By the way, there are no Egyptian records of Moses nor of Canaan at this time. But this invasion did not succeed in conquering any more than the hilly backgrounds of the Promised Land. The coast of the ancient Israelites was now in the hands not of the Canaanites but of newcomers, the Aegean peoples, the Philistines. And they had cities such as Gaza, Gath, Ashdod, Ascalon, and Jaffa. And they withstood the Hebrew attack. And for many generations, the children of Abraham remained unknown, rather obscure, living in the hilly backcountry, engaged in bickerings with the Philistines and with the kindred tribes about them, the Moabites and the Midianites and others. You can read it yourself. You can read it in the book of Judges, a record of their struggles and disasters during this period. It's a record of disasters and failures entirely. You can read it for yourself. Now, you want me to go on with this? You want me to jump to the Hillary and the Dillery and the rally in Washington and Israel? I think I'm going to continue what I'm doing. I'm going to do it in my own way, in my own time, my own cadence. I'm not going to mention Obama. I'm not going to mention Trump. I'm not going to mention Hillary. I'm so tired of them. They're only people. I just can't take it anymore. Sometimes I have to just go back to history to find out where we are today, because there's a saying that's true. Those who do not know their past are condemned to repeat it. It was written a different way, which is those who do not know their history are condemned to repeat it. The Spanish philosopher Santayana wrote that. But I've written it another way, which is that in order to go forward, we need to look backward. Michael Savage wrote that. It won't wind up on Breitbart, because just like the other websites that have banned me but listen to the show religiously and take ideas from me, it doesn't matter to me. I am the Moses of radio. I have my own followers. I don't need the world to listen to the show. I need you, the listeners, to listen to the show, and it's to you who I address the story of the Jews, the early history of the Jews, because we have to ask this question. It's all about Iran now, isn't it? Iran says they will wipe Israel off the map as soon as Obama gives them the $150 billion pathway to a nuclear weapon and missiles. They're very clear about it. We know who Obama is. Obama is a sympathetic Muslim. It doesn't matter whether he actually gets on a prayer rug to me, because there are Muslims who oppose Iran. There are Muslims who oppose ISIS. Unfortunately, our president is not with them. Our president doesn't seem to like Jordan and Egypt very much. He seems to love Iran. He seems to be in love with the mullahs who want to take Israel off the map. And so whether or not this little history of the Jews is important to you, it's very important to the story I'm about to tell you and where we end up at the end of the day right here on the Savage Nation. So please be here.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Hey, our Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com. The only company I trust for wealth insurance, gold and silver. Call 800-BUY-COIN.
Michael Savage. It's one of the most incompetent contracts. Forget about deals from any standpoint. Whether you look at real estate, whether you look at war, whether it's one of the most incompetently drawn contracts I've ever seen. We could have had a much better deal. We could have had a much stronger deal. We should have doubled up the sanctions, negotiated for strength. We don't get anything. We're getting nothing from this deal. And then you look at certain countries who are opposed to it. Now, all of a sudden, out of the blue, they come, as an example, Saudi Arabia, they came back. Well, what are they getting? You know what we're giving them in terms of guarantees and weapons and money, probably? It's an embarrassment to our country.
So that's Donald Trump, vehemently opposed to Obama's throwing Israel to the Iranian wolves. And what's interesting to me is I'm giving you a little history of the Jewish people, so we don't just start with today. We have to go backwards in time, and I brought you all the way back to ancient Babylon and the hilly rocks of the area. And I'm not going to repeat myself, but I'm going to continue from where I left off and show you what I think and where we should be thinking about Israel. Because many people are just looking at this from the point of view of realpolitik, which is that there are more Arabs, more Muslims, more money, go with them. Who needs Israel? It's over. We did our best. They're a burden. Many people see it that way. Now, this is an interesting week. It's a very big week for the Jewish people, who set the pace for most of the world to this day in terms of the calendar, whether you know it or not. Even if you're a Christian, you're following some of the rhythms of the ancient world, in that it's back to school and the summer, beginning of autumn. Well, coincidentally, and probably coincidentally, it's also the Jewish New Year comes around this time. And it's coming this next Monday, the 14th of September. And so the people who you know as the Jewish people, the calendar ends and it begins. A new calendar begins. The year 5,775 ends and begins the year 5,776. And I'm sure that Obama and the other Iranian fellow travelers in the White House would like to see this be amongst the last years of this calendar. Amongst the last.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282.
Today is an interesting day because the hater in Iran, the chief hater in Iran, who Obama's doing a deal with, said that the state of Israel will not exist, the nation, in 25 years, owing to what they're doing to Israel and the hate from the left in America and the West amongst liberals. Israel will cease to exist in 25 years. What's intriguing to me is that this in the Jewish calendar is the year 5,775. So they're saying basically the state of Israel, the nation of Israel, will not exist after the year 6,000. It'll disappear. So, I'm sorry, 775 and 25 years, it's over. 25 years, it's over. Well, it could be Iran will disappear in 25 years if they keep it up. It's also possible the mullahs will be tried for the war crimes in The Hague. It's possible that these monsters, these haters, these upsetters of world stability will be in some international tribunal for the hatred they've espoused and continue to espouse without any consequences whatsoever. Anything's possible. We don't know what 25 years will bring. It could be in 25 years some of the leadership in America will be before an international tribunal for the damage they've done to the world and the hate that they've spewed. Could be in 25 years Hillary Clinton will be tried in an international court for causing the dissolution of the Middle East with a failed policy known as the Arab Spring. Anything's possible in 25 years. We don't know. Now, I'm going to back up for a minute. There's no point in me trying to force others to see things my way, because it's only going to make you even more determined to take an opposing viewpoint. All I'm going to do today is present you with the facts and let you make up your own minds, okay? So let me go back now to who the Jews were, and I'm not going to do it to the exclusion of everything else. And I left off with an ancient time in Israel, and in the ancient times, the ancient Jews were ruled, so far as there was any rule at the time, by priestly judges elected by the elders of the people. Selected, not elected. Selected by the elders of the people. The same way that our leaders are selected, not elected. As you well know, we have a closed system in America where we have a phantom of democracy, but there is none. All of the leadership is selected by the leaders. And then what happened is around 1000 BC, they chose a king named Saul to lead them in battle. But Saul didn't do very good. He died under a hail of Philistine arrows at the Battle of Mount Gilboa. And his armor was taken into the temple of the Philistine Venus. His body was nailed to the walls of Beth Shan. Following him was David, much more successful, a better politician. David gave the dawn to prosperity. And the only period of prosperity that the ancient Jews ever knew was under David. And that's because he was a good politician. He had a close alliance with the Phoenician city of Tyre, whose king Hiram was a very intelligent man who wanted to secure a trade route to the Red Sea through the Hebrew hill country. Normally, Phoenician trade went to the Red Sea through Egypt. But Egypt was in a state of disorder. And so Hiram established the closest relations both with David and with his son and successor, Solomon. I'm giving you a little history that many of you probably know or don't know. You say, well, what do I care about this? If you don't care about it, go turn on some rap artist. Go be an average American. Turn on some moron who dribbles basketballs right now, who has an interest in politics all of a sudden. An idiot who spent his whole life bouncing a ball on a wooden court is suddenly an expert in Iran and Donald Trump. Go listen to him. Or listen to John, whatever, on television, who writes gets laugh lines written for them by people far smarter than them. Or you can listen to me, and I'll go on. So then Hiram wants the trade route. David gives it to him. And under Hiram's auspices, the walls, palace, and temple of Jerusalem arose. And in return, Hiram built and launched his ships on the Red Sea. And there was great trade between north and south through Jerusalem. Solomon achieved the great prosperity and magnificence. He was even given a daughter of Pharaoh in marriage. Some of this comes back to you now from biblical class. But remember this. It's important to keep the proportion of what I'm telling you in context. Because even at the climax of all of his glory, Solomon was only a little subordinate king in a tiny city. Let's not get carried away here. His power was so transitory that after a few years after his death, the first pharaoh of the 22nd dynasty had taken Jerusalem and looted most of its splendors. Just a few years after his death, the first pharaoh of the 22nd dynasty, Shishak, took Jerusalem, looted most of its splendors. And so we move on. I'm not going to give you every little piece of history here, what happened, because the prosperity of the ancient Hebrews was short-lived. Hiram died. And then Egypt grew strong again. And then there was a history of the kings of Israel and the kings of Judah, which becomes a history of two small states ground up between first Syria and then Assyria and then Babylon to the north and Egypt to the south. It's a tale of disasters and deliverances that only delayed further disaster. That's the history of the Jewish people. It's a history of disaster. Always walking around with a cloud hanging over their head. Which, I mean, I can now jump right to Hollywood and ask myself, how in the heck could men like Harvey Weinstein and other supporters of Israel be so foolish as to support a man like Obama who wants the destruction of Israel? I don't understand how it's possible. Other than, if you want to make it very political, the reason guys like Weinstein and Katzenberg and Spielberg and Geffen support Obama to the detriment of Israel is because it's good for business. Because Obama has bought them off with movie credits, tax credits, movie credits, and whatnot. And that's all that matters to them. It's all business. And they're smart enough to make billions of dollars and make movies that the whole world watches. They're smart enough to figure the script out, aren't they? So they know what they're doing. So like Zuckerberg, why does Zuckerberg want America flooded with illegal aliens? Cheaper labor. That's all. There's not enough money for pigs. There's not enough money for pigs. Don't you understand that? Okay, now let's get back to the history. I'm trying to jump back and forth here. So what happens? What happens is eventually the Jews are kicked out again and sent to Babylon. And then in Babylon, the Jewish people got their history together and evolved their tradition. And then the people who brought back to Jerusalem at the command of Cyrus were now a much more knowledgeable people. They had developed a whole civilization. And in the development of the ancient Hebrew civilization, there was a very great part played by certain men, a new type of man, known as the prophets. And the prophets mark in the history of the world the appearance of new and remarkable forces in the development of human society. So who were the prophets? I have to go back at time to what's going on around the area in the Mediterranean and trade in the Semitic world. I have to talk about Spain, Sicily, Africa, Carthage. But I'm not going to do it now because it'll take forever. I told you earlier how Hiram cooperated with Solomon to build ships on the Red Sea for the Arabian and perhaps the Indian trade. Very important. But in the same time, the Pharaoh Necho was a Phoenician. In the same time of the Pharaoh Necho, there was a Phoenician expedition which sailed completely around Africa. So bigger things were happening than what was happening in Israel. And at the same time, the Aryan peoples were still barbarians, living like cavemen. The Aryans were like cavemen. Only the Greeks were building a new civilization on the ruins of the one they had destroyed. Just to give you some context. But around 800 BC, nobody on earth would have been able to prophesy that before the 3rd century BC, every trace of Semitic dominion would be wiped out by Aryan-speaking conquerors, and that everywhere the Semitic peoples would be subjects or tributaries or scattered altogether. Everywhere except in the northern deserts of Arabia, where the Bedouin adhered steadily to the nomadic way of life. The ancient way of life of the Semites before Sargon the First, etc. But remember this, the Arab Bedouin were never conquered by Aryan masters. The Arab Bedouin will never be conquered by anyone. So we have these civilized Semites beaten and overrun in these five centuries. And only one people held together and clung to their ancient traditions. And that was this small group of people called the Jews, who, as I said to you earlier, was sent back to build their city of Jerusalem by Cyrus the Persian. Remember, Cyrus was a Persian. Think about that. Just think about how advanced this world could be if we had one Persian today who was as intelligent and as benevolent and as far-seeing as Cyrus. We have medieval throwbacks running Iran. Because if we had men like Cyrus, we wouldn't even be having the problems we've been having today. But we have no Cyrus in Iran. They were all run out of Iran. They're living in Marin County running shoe stores. So there is no Cyrus. So now we get to the Bible. They're able to develop something, a literature, as I said, called the Bible. Now, many believe it's God's word. They developed it in Babylon. And people say it's not so much the Jews who made the Bible as the Bible which made the Jews. And what was the Bible? Ideas that were different from the ideas of the people around them. Very sustaining ideas. And the Jewish people have clung to them through 25 centuries of hardship and oppression. So what is the main idea of the Jewish people? That God was invisible and remote. He lived in a temple not made with hands. He was a Lord of righteousness that reigned over the earth. Remember, at the time, all other peoples had national gods embodied in images that lived in temples. And they believed if the image was smashed and the temple raised, then the god died out. But the Jews had a new idea. The God of the Jews in the heavens, high above priests and sacrifices, could not be destroyed. And this God of Abraham, that the ancient Jews believed, had chosen them to be his peculiar people, not only to restore Jerusalem and make it the capital of righteousness in the world, and it gave the Jewish people a sense of exaltation. They had a sense of common destiny. And so this belief sustained them when they returned to Jerusalem after the captivity in Babylon. Don't you think it's a miracle that in their days of subjugation, don't you think in those days when they were subjugated by Babylonians and Syrians and the others and Phoenicians, I mean, they spoke practically the same language. They had almost the same They had endless customs, habits, tastes, and traditions in common. Isn't it odd that they should be attracted by this inspiring cult, the ancient Jews, and seek to share in the fellowship and promise of this ancient cult? Isn't it odd? Why was that? Why were so many people drawn to this idea of an invisible God that could not be shattered in a temple built by man's hands? And what happened next? After the fall of Tyre, Sidon, Carthage, and the Spanish Phoenician cities, the Phoenicians suddenly vanished from history. And as suddenly, we find not simply in Jerusalem, but in Spain, Africa, Egypt, Arabia, and the East, wherever the Phoenicians had set their feet, communities of Jews, and they were all tied together by the Bible and by the reading of the Bible. Jerusalem was from the beginning only their nominal capital. The real capital of the Jews was the Bible. It was not a city. The capital of the Jewish people was the Bible, not a city. And that's something new in history. It is very new in history. But unfortunately for those of you who think it's unique, it's not. The seeds were sown long before when the Sumerians and Egyptians began to turn their hieroglyphics into writing. You'll have to study that to see that many of the customs of the Jewish people are actually ancient Egyptian customs. If you're Jewish and you have a mezuzah on your doorpost, you know those little slanted things the Jewish people put on their doorposts in which there's a scroll? That's an Egyptian custom. I know Jewish people don't want to accept it, but it was an Egyptian custom. But that's irrelevant. What's relevant is we go on. So the Jews and the people around them somehow became the same. A new kind of community emerged. And then something happened. Something really important happened. And that was the prophets. Who were the prophets? Where did they come from? What did they believe in? How did they shape the world? And what did the ancient prophets have to do with today's world? Moreover, why would a man like Barack Hussein Obama go against the will of the American people, both parties of Congress, and use political maneuvering to line up with the equivalent of the ancient, evil Iranian King Haman? Has Obama become the new King Haman himself? Well, don't ask Harvey Weinstein. He doesn't even know who Haman is. I'll be back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Your Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com. It's the only company I trust for tangible assets, gold and silver. Call 800-BUY-COIN. Of course. We're talking about, is Israel the real problem? Should the U.S. continue to support Israel? And for almost an hour now, I've given you the history of the Jewish people. Time for one quick question. Fire away, line 6, Mike, ABC, what's your question?
I actually got two questions, but all right, whatever. How come Israel is allowed to have one of the biggest nuclear arsenals in the world, and no one else is allowed around them?
Has Israel ever threatened to annihilate a people on the planet, to wipe a people off the planet?
No, but what do they need it for?
Well, there's your answer. It's a defensive weapon. The same reason people are allowed to have weapons in America under the Second Amendment. But Iran has said that when they get the nuclear weapon, they will wipe Israel off the planet. So your answer is simple. That's why Iran must never be allowed to have a nuclear weapon. Because I believe the Iranians are telling the truth. I don't think they're lying. Does that answer your question?
Oh, okay. Yeah,
have a nice day. I'm sure the Bund meeting starts in a few minutes somewhere in Brooklyn in a basement with the flags and the rotating wall with the Nazi memorabilia on it. And you can worship Khomeini in the basements of Brooklyn. You can worship Khomeini. You can go to Syria and join ISIS and rape an 8-year-old girl and then call yourself a devout Muslim. Anything's possible in this world. So Israel's had nuclear weapons. They say hundreds of them. Never heard them threaten to wipe anyone off the planet. Never heard them say they're going to wipe any people off the planet and commit genocide. But Obama's friends in Iran have promised that as recently as, I think, yesterday, that they will wipe Israel off the planet. And he's going ahead anyway. Democrats say no. Republicans say no. But there's money in it, so Feinstein said yes. Trace the money. See what Feinstein might be making from it.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage. We'll be right back. Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of unprotected talk, borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
They take our money, they make us look like fools, and now they're back to being who they really are. They don't want Israel to survive. They will not let Israel survive with incompetent leadership like we have right now. Israel will not survive. Israel will not exist in 25 years. Think of that.
That's Donald Trump today, actually just an hour or so ago in Washington, in a rally to stop the Iran deal, which is a moot point because Obama has outmaneuvered everyone because he doesn't believe in the parliament, in the system of government that has given him so much. Obama has a more tribal view of government, which is that he's the king, he's the boss, he's the ruler, and by any means necessary, he will override the people, he'll override the parties, he'll override the Supreme Court, he'll override the Constitution, because he fundamentally has a contempt for our way of governance. Now, we're going back to the fundamental question of Israel again. Is Israel America's problem? Should the U.S. continue to support Israel, and why? Is Israel the real problem in the world? Many of you children who've come through the American educational system have the mistaken notion that if only the Arabs were allowed to have Israel, there'd be no problems in the world, and that's because you have no sense of what's going on in the world. You know nothing about the other conflicts between Muslims and their neighbors. Kashmir, China, Russia, Philippines, wherever you turn, there's a problem between Muslims and their neighbors. The only one we know of is Israel because the American left has made it the only problem you shall know of. And now to the forefront come the Jew haters, the Iranians. And the problem here is that the Iranian leadership that could have made peace with the world, such as was made in ancient Israel by Cyrus the Persian with Solomon, don't exist. Those Iranians have been killed or thrown into exile by these fanatical Neolithic throwbacks running Iran, who Obama seems to love. Why Obama, the great educated man, would like Neolithic throwback Muslims, I cannot understand. Why doesn't he side with educated Muslims, such as the King of Jordan? Why doesn't he side with educated good leaders, such as the leader of Egypt, the general? Why does he side with these Neolithic throwbacks of Iran? And why do so many American politicians, such as Dianne Feinstein, side suddenly with this Iran deal, even though they're Jewish? Well, you'll have to do some investigation. When there's $150 billion about to flow back to Iran, and companies are tripping over themselves to do deals with these monsters, you have to figure there's money there. And if there's money there, well, there's some U.S. senators there and some congressmen there. Well, not directly, of course. Not directly through shell companies, front companies, relatives, in my estimation. That's what you have in the United States of America today, in my estimation, in my opinion. Now you understand why suddenly people of Jewish descent would suddenly back, even a guy like Schumer, as liberal as he is, understood it would be the death of Israel to do this deal. Not Feinstein, though. Why? I smell money. So let's go to some of the callers. Is Israel the real problem? Should the U.S. continue to support Israel, and why? Again, if you missed the first hour, I can't repeat it. But I began with who the Jewish people were. I talked about the Babylonian captivity. I talked about Hiram. I talked about the land of the Hebrews. I talked about who the Jews were before they were taken into captivity in Babylon. And I talked about the five books of Moses and how they were ruled in the past, in the ancient past. And then I talked about the emergence of the prophets where I left off and who they were. And the prophets marked the appearance of new and remarkable forces in the development of human history, and who they were and what they did for the world. Now, many of you believe that the Bible is the word of man, not of God. Many of you believe it's the word of God, not man. It's almost irrelevant. The prophets, such as Ezekiel, for example, came from different backgrounds. Ezekiel was one of the prophets, and he came from the priestly caste, while the prophet Amos was a shepherd. But they all had something in common, and they all gave allegiance to no one but to the God of righteousness, and they also were able to speak directly to the people. Now, I want to pause right there. Isn't that exactly what we, the people in America, are praying to find in a leader? Someone who speaks of righteousness and can speak directly to us, as opposed to that false harridan, Hillary Clinton, for example? Do you think Hillary Clinton gives allegiance to the God of truth and righteousness? And do you really tell me that Hillary Clinton speaks directly to the people? No, she's not of the prophet class. She is of the most cynical class, which is why she is hated. And so the prophets gave allegiance to no one but to the God of truth, righteousness, and they spoke directly to the people. They were like the talk show hosts of their day. I'm not pulling your leg on that. We speak directly to you, or we wouldn't be on the air. I wouldn't be on the air 20-some-odd years if I didn't reach you. Whether you agree with me or not is irrelevant. I'm touching you. I'm reaching you. And I'm making you think. And so I speak directly to the people every day. In that sense, I have a bit of the prophet in me. Do I speak only to the God of righteousness? No, because I'm an ordinary man. I'm not a prophet. There are talk show hosts who pretend to speak only to the God of righteousness, but they have their eye on the cash register. Never forget the ka-ching. But the ancient prophets gave the word of God, and their formula was simple. The word of God came to me, and they call it the word of the Lord came unto me. If you read the Old Testament, it's always the word of the Lord. And I have to translate that when I'm reading the Old Testament, because I don't like the word Lord. I reject the whole concept of Lord, someone lording over me. If I read the Holy Scriptures, which I do from time to time, and I read, the Lord said unto Joshua, fear them not, I translated, God said unto Joshua. I don't like the word Lord. I don't live in England. I don't like English lords, and I don't like the idea of Lord. I like the idea of God. My own, I'm just giving a personal viewpoint. And so what did some of the things the prophets say? Well, for one, they were very political. They exhorted the people against Egypt. They kept attacking Egypt. They attacked Assyria. They attacked Babylon. They put down the indolence of the priestly order of or the flagrant sins of the king. And some of them actually became what we call socialists today. They were into social reform. They said that the rich were grinding the faces of the poor. The luxurious were consuming the children's bread. Wealthy people made friends with and imitated the splendors and vices of foreigners. And they said that this is hateful to Jehovah, the God of Abraham, who would punish this land for doing this. And they wrote these down. They wrote down these diatribes against the rich and against the other nations. And they preserved them and studied them. And wherever the Jews went, they spread this new religious spirit. They carried the common man past the priest in the temple, past court and king, and brought the common man face to face with the rule of righteousness. And that's the importance of the Jews in the world. You understand that? Is to bring the average man face to face with the rule of righteousness, whether you believe in God or not, is irrelevant. At least you know what righteousness is. So you could be an atheist and be addicted to the concept of righteousness, and it could animate you. Righteousness or truth could animate you day and night. And you could hate Hillary Clinton and be a liberal because you know she's a liar. You also know that she's a phony, and you know that the nation will not survive another 8 years of them. See? That's the important thing. But remember this, it was that in the supreme utterances of Isaiah that the prophetic voice came up to a whole new era. Because they foreshadowed the whole earth united and at peace under one God. That's the message of the Bible, by the way. It's not a message of war and dissent. The ultimate message of the Bible is a belief that the entire earth will be united and at peace under one God. Do you understand that? If you really read the Old Testament, you'll find that. You may not find it in individual complaints and this and that, but you'll find it there. So if you read the Old Testament, you'll find a lot of hate in them. You'll find prejudice. You'll find evil. You'll find stuff that reminds you of the propaganda of some of the worst regimes in history. But all I can say to you is that overall the Bible gave something new to the world, the power of individual moral appeal, an appeal to the free conscience of mankind against the sacrifices and slavish loyalties that had bridled and harnessed the human being. And on that note, I'll stop with my little history of the Jewish people. And we go back to the politics of the day. You get it? Is Israel the real problem? Should the U.S. continue to support Israel or throw them to the wolves the way Obama has done? And again, you have to know history. Please do not call the show if you don't know even a scintilla of the conflicts in the world and how the Muslims have fought the Hindus in India over Kashmir, or how the Muslims have attacked China, and how the Chinese don't worry about any laws. They go down and suppress whole villages and kill them if they have to. Or how about Russia, the Chechen separatists who are Muslims? Or how about the Moros of the Philippines who are Muslims, who were central, by the way, to the Spanish-American War, if you want to know a little history of that one. Now, I often don't go into history on this show. You know that I used to do it a lot more than I do now. I did it today, even though it's a national show in prime time. I took a chance. I don't have flashing lights. I don't wear lipstick. I don't have stockings and high heels to use to attract your attention. That's for Roger Ailes. That's his technique. But I think the talk radio needs to go in other directions and do a little more depth here. Who is it? What is Israel? Why should we care about Israel? What does Israel, the idea, mean? Why should the United States be wed to Israel? Should we cut ourselves off from Israel? Would that grant us world peace if we did? These are the questions of the day. I'll take some calls now. I've talked now for 75 minutes or so with breaks and whatnot on the history. So now I'm going to go to some callers. Okay? And I'll take you in any order, random order, anywhere in America. 855-400-7282. I truly don't know where to begin. Let's start with I don't know which station to start with. I really don't. Okay, Mendel on WABC is already, he wants to argue with me. So let's start with an Orthodox Jew who wants to argue. Go ahead, Mendel.
First of all, you made so many mistakes, too numerous for me to get into them one by one.
You know, I don't like you. You're the kind of person I detest. You're the reason that people don't like Jews in the world. Do you know that? What makes you think you're smarter than me?
Because when you said...
What makes you think an unknown schnook somewhere in Brooklyn with sponge cake in his beard smarter than me? What makes you think you're so smart?
When you said King Haman, you showed everybody that you don't know what you're talking about. There never was a King Haman. It was King Ahasuerus. Number two, the reason that...
What are you talking about? What is wrong with you? Don't you understand that your kind of small-minded hatred has produced prejudice in this country? Do you understand that your meanness produces hatred?
Yourself, you just because you're...
I have just given you the history of the Jewish people and millions of others who listen to the show religiously. And just remember, loudmouth, the audience in any 15 minutes of this show is over 350,000 people in any 15-minute interval. Do you understand how big the audience is? So before you shoot your foul mouth off again, think about who you're talking to. You're not in the yeshiva berating students who have no chance to fight with you. What is the point of calling me? To tell me I'm wrong and you're right? Nobody knows you, Mendel. Nobody will ever know you, Mendel. The only thing you can give the audience right now is some sechel, which in Hebrew means wisdom. Give us some wisdom. Go ahead, Mendel.
Okay, number one, the first prophet was Adam. And then there was Eve, and then there was Abraham. Oh, there was Noah before them. If you don't have to come all the way up to Ezekiel and the rest.
From your cult. Sorry, no cult videos on my show. No cult videos on the show. Do you have anything else to share with this large audience that's listening to you, Mendel?
Yeah, I'm going to share with you the reason for the Jewish people. The reason that they could never get rid of Israel is because God made the Jewish people his eternal people. There must be a Jewish people.
Yeah, all right, let me ask you something. You're so sure of that. Did you fight in the IDF?
I'm not born in Israel. I'm born here.
Well, why don't you go there and fight in the IDF if you believe that? You got a big mouth in Brooklyn, but you won't fight in the IDF. You let the other boys die for your beliefs.
The world that would destroy the Jews.
Why do you oppose fighting in the Israel Defense Forces if you're such an adamant, righteous Jew? Why? Why don't you go there and fight for them?
on the floor learning in the yeshiva what spikes.
I just asked you a question. Why don't you go there and join the IDF? What, you're too good for it?
Oh, it's because I'm good for...
And who is it that defends men like you, Mendel? Who is it has permitted men like you to live? Isn't it the secular Jew who you detest?
Not at all.
Who you spit on behind their backs?
I love all Jews because every single Jew is a child.
All right, take a walk. Now you understand some of the problems that we have in the world. You have throwbacks like this who think that every Jew is a chosen person. Every Jew to a guy like him is a promised person. To him, Israel's the promised land. And he believes this with his heart and soul. And he goes to Israel and he goes to the ancient sites and he spits upon the secular Jews who don't follow the Orthodox laws. And yet it's the secular Jews who pay his travel, pay his way, pay for his yeshiva, and fight in the military. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
My Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com, the only company I trust to protect my wealth with gold and silver. Call 800-BUYCOIN. Look, if religious fanatics want to call the show, go ahead, make my day. But it's a waste of everyone's time. The audience is enormous. They don't want to hear this kind of bickering. I asked a fundamental question. I gave probably the most erudite, brief history of the Israelites or the Jewish people you ever heard in the history of talk radio. And then I get this lunatic from Brooklyn who thinks he's haranguing some poor kids, 14 years old, in a temple somewhere. The question is this with the Iran deal. Is Israel a real problem? Again, I can't even develop an idea. Honest to God, my brain is too big for this format. You know, that's what's happening. My brain has grown in all these years. It was always too large for my own good. I can't condense it in 12 seconds. I need an hour now to say what I want to say, not 4 seconds. So I'll be back because I have a very long segment right after this. And I'll ask the fundamental question, are the Jews about to be punished again?
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Last break, which was very, very short, I ended up by asking a question, which is, are the Jews about to be punished again? It was a very pregnant question, because Jewish history is filled with punishment. Just as the Jewish people had been predestined for and saved from slavery in Egypt, the ancient Israelites were also predestined to be punished by God through the Babylonians and then saved once more. And then, of course, we know about the Holocaust. Where'd that come from? Why did it appear? What was the meaning of it? I don't even want to go into that. And what's happening right now is a continuation of this. And here in America, we have the equivalent of King Haman, the evil King Haman of Persia, in the form of Barack Obama, who is very much like King Haman. But he is so silk smooth in his act that he acts as though he's the actual friend of the Jews, when the exact opposite is true. Most American people oppose the Iran deal, not because they love Israel so much, but because they know Iran is a rogue terrorist nation that will be a threat to world stability. That's the main reason. Most American people in every poll oppose the deal that Iran is doing with Obama and his profiteers. And don't make any mistake about it. There's $150 billion at stake. So just follow the money. Take any one of the senators, high-profile senators, who's for the deal. See what their husbands or wives have in business. And then trace the business to Iran and Iranian money. You'll get your answer, that's all. But let's go back to the big questions of the day on the Savage Nation. Should we continue to support Israel? Why or why not? We're at a new junction in world history. Everyone knows that. Some of us know it more so than others. Some of us see it more so than others. Some of us are able to have a global view more so than others. The world is changing. The flood of refugees coming out of Syria and Iraq right now was caused by Hillary Clinton and the Arab Spring. One of the most unmitigated humanitarian disasters in human history, caused by the very woman who gets up there and talks about emails as though that's the most important thing. It isn't. That's now a cover-up for what she did with the Arab Spring. And that's why suddenly ABC and the others are making believe they really want to get to the bottom of the email scandal. Because they don't want to get at the bottom of the real scandal, what she did to the world order. With that evil, evil man, George Soros, funding it. And that crazy maniac, Brzezinski, being the architect of the Arab Spring, Hillary Clinton enacted it. That's my view of it. And now that's why you're suddenly seeing, oh, well, look at this. ABC is really hammering her on the emails. They're not. They're doing it because it's a charade. Charade. They should be asking her about the Arab Spring and what it did to the world order. And should she go to prison for it? Do you feel that she should turn herself into The Hague to be tried as a war criminal for what she did? So let's go back to this. Let's go back to this. The world is changing. Humanitarian crisis, fiscal crisis, you name it. And people, unfortunately, are not willing to change until they're forced to change. We're all the same way. Nobody will change until they have to change. So the Orthodox Jewish people will continue on their merry way. They will continue to look down upon the secular Jews in Israel, even though it is the secular Jewish community that fights the wars and provides them with the money to pray in the yeshivas. They have to change. They have to change. They have to learn to live in the real world, or they're not going to live at all. And here in America, we have to change. The world is changing around us. You know, there's an old adage I learned in high school when I was learning about evolution. I was learning about what animals died off and what animals survived. And so, you know, certain things you learn in high school, you remember. Most things you forget. Certain things stick in your mind and you never forget them. And it was, I learned in high school biology, those animals that were able to adapt survived, and those animals who could not adapt died. So the large animals, for example, I learned, the dinosaur, and the giant animals couldn't adapt to the changing climate at the time, they died. Right? You learn that. Of course, that was before the internal combustion engine, but don't teach that to the community organizer from Chicago. He didn't know anything about the dinosaurs and why they died off. Nevertheless, those animals who can adapt survive, and those animals who can't adapt die off. Everyone listening to the show, we are nothing but naked apes with a human soul. We're naked apes with a human soul. And we have to learn to adapt to the new world. Whether we like it or not is irrelevant. There's a new world out there, and there's a new world order that's emerged. And we may not like it, we may hate it, we may detest it. We can fight it with everything in us. But, you know, I tell people who I know who are far more intelligent than I and even more successful than you can imagine, who are crazy with fear about what's coming in this world, and all I say to them is, fear not, because you cannot control a tidal wave. Fear not, you cannot control a tidal wave. Just try to ride it. Get on top of that wave, because you see it coming. Paddle out as far as you have to. Don't run from that wave. You better run into that wave. Something I learned as a young amateur swimmer in Hawaii when I lived there. I was taught by some surfers. I'm not a surfer at all, but I learned wave action. And the first instinct when you see a wave coming at you is to run away from it. That'll kill you faster than anything. If you can still get under the arc of the wave, you're going to save yourself by swimming through it. Ask anyone who knows water, whether you're a boater or a surfer, right? What does that have to do with today? Well, there's coming waves coming at us. And you've got to learn how to get at the wave, get into the wave, and get through that wave. So now that brings us back to Israel. Is Israel going to survive this new wave of hatred? Now that Iran, which was once a pirate nation, suddenly has been made into a nation that's acceptable because of Obama, and now Israel's been turned into the pirate nation by the new King Haman, Obama. Can Israel survive this? I don't know. I have no idea. I'm not a prophet. I'm only a talk show host. I think that the Jewish people in Israel are worried that they won't survive. And the hatred against the Jewish people in Israel is not coming solely from Iran or anti-Semites. The majority of it is coming from fellow Jews in the United States of America with the disallow movement. They're all communist Jews here in America, mainly college teachers, who are part of this divest from Israel group. They are the new collaborators with Hitler, and they don't even know what they're doing. Or they wouldn't be doing it. They think that they're on the tip of the social justice movement, but they're on the tip of the neo-Nazi movement. Or shall I say the neo-Iranian movement? Because it's one and the same thing. Today. And so the greatest threat to Israel is not so much Iran. It's the liberal communist Jews in America who have started the divest movement, trying to boycott Israeli goods, to damage the Jews, damage the Jewish people, damage Israel, destroy it. They are a greater threat than Iran. And I don't think the people understand how grave the threat really is. They may even be your neighbor. 855-400-7282. Maybe I should take a caller or two. It's almost an hour and 40 minutes into the show. And I guess I can take calls. I don't know where to begin. I mean, I really don't know where to begin. I'll start here in my hometown of San Francisco. KSFO, Michael from San Francisco. What's on your mind, Michael?
Oh, Dr. Savage, what an honor. I just wanted to say, I just heard that you play from Mr. Trump about saying that the Jews would not survive the next 25 years. I really don't believe that's going to happen because, as you say, the Jews have been spared and saved time over and over, miraculously at some times. I have a dear friend. He's a Jew. His brother passed away. He was one of the jumpers in the World Trade Center. And this guy was a hardcore Democrat. And he told me that that event shaped his life. He went back into his Jew tradition. He practices the Orthodox tradition. And he knows I'm a Christian. I'm a LDS Christian. And we get along fine. I don't go against
him. Yes, the greatest friends the Jews have on the planet are fundamentalist Christians. And the worst enemies the Jews have on the planet are the communist left-wing Jews in the United States of America and Europe who hate Israel. Hate Israel in a way you can never imagine. They're a graver threat to Israel than Iran is. Do you understand? You do understand what I'm saying.
Absolutely, Dr. Savage.
You do understand that it's the Katzenberg, Hatzenberg, Matzenberg, Ratzenberg characters in Hollywood who are a graver threat to Israel than Iran is. Why do you think I ridicule these powerful men of Jewish descent in Hollywood? Because they make me sick. They produce pollution and violence, and then they go out and preach against guns. Here's Harvey Weinstein. This guy drives me crazy altogether. Here is a guy who's made his fortune by producing violent films. And then the first thing he says a few months ago is, I'm going to make a movie against the NRA. I will destroy them. I'll show them who I am. This is an amazing thing to witness. It's an amazing thing to witness. This moron, billionaire who produced so much violence and filth, doesn't even know the history of his own people, if he can say a thing like that. Because if Weinstein gave me 5 minutes in a restaurant, I could teach him a little history. I may actually bring him back to reality and save him. I would teach him what happened in the Holocaust and how the few Jews who escaped into the mountains and the woods in Poland, for example, and ran into the woods. One of the first things they had to do after getting food was get a gun. They had to break into farmhouses to get a gun in order to survive in those woods, Harvey. Without a gun, there would be no Jewish survivors in World War II. Does he know that? Does he know they had to take guns from Polish farmers? They had to steal them? Does he know they had to kill Germans with their bare hands or rocks to get their guns? And that without those guns, they would not have survived those brutal winters? He doesn't know that, does he? Because he lives in Beverly Hills where all is sky blue and white clouds. I was just there. It's very easy to forget what the real world is. To forget what's changing in the world around you. Very easy to do. And that's why I have such contempt for the Hollywood crowd, the Hollywood mob, the Hollywood porno makers, the softcore porno, the violence, or guys like Sean Penn who espouse anti-gun rhetoric while every movie is beating someone up or killing them or cutting them apart with an axe. I don't understand how people don't see this. The word hypocrisy doesn't even work for these guys. It's something else. It's called insanity. It's called insanity. Liberalism is a mental disorder. It is a drug unto itself that's poisonous. Now let's go to the callers. I don't know where to begin. I don't know if I even want callers. I think I'd rather do more history. I'm in one of my weird moods. Remember yesterday I did something else? I did yesterday something so different. I talked about poetry. I read A.E. Hosman. And I talked about how he was hated even as a poet because of his appalling sarcasms and his unmitigated scorn for bad poets. And I said that I have appalling sarcasm and unmitigated scorn for politicians and public figures in America. Remember that? Remember I also told you that I, Michael Savage, am known as pugnacious and opinionated? Yes, but that's one side of the moon. But I also told you that were it not for my elegance and intellectual fastidiousness, I wouldn't be where I am today. There's a lot of pugnacious and opinionated people, but they don't get too far in terms of being read, as I have with one bestseller after another, being listened to on a daily basis by a large audience, because anyone can be pugnacious and opinionated, and that could pass for something or other. You could even be a basketball dribbler. You could be pugnacious and opinionated, have tattoos and say things. But under the surface, there's nothing there. There's no elegance. There's no intellectual fastidiousness. There's nothing. It's just a dribbler with a basketball. Now they're in the political world now. See, it's a little different. They confuse. People listen to this show confuse me. They think, oh, just be brusque, sound like a longshoreman from New York in the 50s, and you'll get ahead. Those shows don't last because they don't understand the subtext of it all. They don't hear it. They only hear the surface. So now I want to go back to the big issue of the day, because we're coming upon Friday night, Saturday night, Sunday night, the first night of the Rosh Hashanah, the Jewish New Year, which means the head of the year. Jews around the world will celebrate the advent, the end of 1 year, 5775, beginning of 5776, and ask themselves a question, which is how much longer can Israel go on, and how much longer can Israel survive, and will it, with King Haman in the White House, who is going against the will of the people, the will of Congress itself, through legal manipulations in Congress. That's what he's doing. This is not a man who believes in the system that he has, that has given him so much. The more I study this man in the White House, the more I realize he has no respect for our system of laws. He looks upon this as something to get around. And that is because he's fundamentally, in his heart, not an American. I know that's a harsh observation, but it's my own. Others may have said it. He doesn't think like an American. He doesn't act like an American. He acts like a man who comes from another time and another place, almost pharaonic in his nature, thinking that he's a pharaoh of ancient Egypt and that he has the divine right to make decisions no matter what meddlesome Congress may say. Forget the people. They don't count at all. They're nothing but cannon fodder for him. Get it? I'll be back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
My Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com. It's the only company I trust to protect my wealth. Call 800-BUY-CON. We got breaking news on the Savage Nation. Just passed, the communist one-party state of California has just approved right-to-die legislation. The communist one-party state under Governor Brown, the Fuhrer of California, just approved a measure that would allow California doctors to prescribe life-ending drugs to terminally ill patients. Now, as you well know, this is the mark of an atheist. This is the mark of a state that hates life. You do know that religious people oppose suicide. This is a suicide mission. It's assisted suicide is what it is. Dr. Kevorkian in the state legislature just passed this because they don't believe in the sanctity of life. They sell baby body parts. Now they're telling you, you know, if you don't feel good, we'll help you kill yourself. That's all. You know, you're nothing. You're nothing but a pile of bones and a foul sack. You have no soul, no spirit. This is what California has become. The late great state of California under this demonic one-party system did exactly what Oregon has done. And by the way, how has this worked out for those in Holland? Would you like to know a little bit about the right-to-die legislation in Holland, that advanced state, that dying advanced state of Europe, the once great state of nation of Holland? 12-year-olds in Holland, maybe it's 14-year-olds, are now committing suicide with doctors' drugs because they don't feel good. They don't like the way they feel. These are the nations that are dying while the Muslims are taking them over. It's all God's will. I'm convinced of it. I mean, right now it doesn't look like that, but I'm pretty sure that God is behind it all. When he sees a nation committing suicide, he doesn't care who takes it over as long as they believe in God. He figures, let them work it out. If the people don't want to live, you know what? I'll help them along. Same in California. A state committing suicide every day with illegal aliens, assisted suicide.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE.
Savage.
Warning. The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of unprotected thought, borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
The Holocaust, once again facing the hatred of the world, most of it coming not so much from Iran, but from an American communist Jews who are running to divest, attack Israel, universities, Jewish professors, communists attacking Israel. And now we have a president who is much like ancient King Haman. How in the world Jewish people cannot see history repeating itself is not beyond me. I see it all. But you know what? Russia has just eluded a U.S. ban on NATO airspace by flying troops and weapons into Syria via Iraq and Iran. And this is the beginning of a new phase where the rubber meets the rogue. Write it down. It'll be stolen before it leaves my... As the giant transporters arrive from Moscow and their tires squealed on the tarmac, the thin one in Washington, D.C. has just realized he now has a real crisis, one that he can't talk his way out of. It's where the rubber of these Russian air transport tires meet the rogue president of the United States. They're bringing in men, Marines, equipment. They're going to support Assad. The rogue president will not throw Assad out no matter what he thinks he may do. We have now gone from a Cold War started by Obama and the loudmouth Hillary Clinton, who called Putin Hitler a year ago. Think about this. Russia was once a great ally of ours. Great ally. We were getting along. It was the best in history. The best. 50 years were thrown in the garbage by this incompetent, lying, degenerate administration. So now it's gone from a Cold War. It's about to become a hot war. Russian AN-124 Condors fly into Syria, going around the loudmouth and ketchup carry. Get into Syria via Iraq and Iran, and there we are. What do you think the Russians are going to do? Do you think they're going to let this community organizer overthrow Assad? And what? There's even more to this. Iran is on the side of Assad. Do you know that? Do you know that Iran and Russia are both backing Assad? Do you realize this? The very same deceitful game player in the White House who tells us to do a deal with Iran is now in a war with Iran over Assad. Go figure that one out. See if you can follow the bouncing mind of Barack Obama. Follow the bouncing mind of Barack Obama. No wonder he likes basketball so much. It represents his thinking. So now they're in Syria. Huge military buildup. And of course, White House spokesmouth, the Goebbels of Obama, Josh Ernst, our own Goebbels, warned last night the Russian military buildup would risk confrontation with the counter-ISIL coalition that included the United States. There is no counter-ISIL coalition. The United States is ISIL. Explicit American threats, by the way, have American threats of a military blowout with Russia over the Middle East. We have not heard for 40 years since the 1973 Yom Kippur War, which Israel fought against Egypt and Syria. To show you how damaging and dangerous this psychotic administration is, we have not seen a level of danger like this with Russia since 1973. These incompetent meddlers, these left-wing lunatics, these collaborators with the terrorists of Iran have now reached a point of no return. It's where the rubber meets the rogue. Write it down. It'll be stolen before it leaves my lips. The rubber of the transports from Russia meet the rogue president. And let me tell you something. Tell you something real clear. Putin doesn't blink. Putin does not blink. He does not back down. He will not give this up. It's Crimea all over again. The world could go to hell, according to him. He feels that Crimea was part of Russia, which it was, by the way, since the 1800s. He took it. Nothing happened. And now he believes that Assad is his ally, and he's not like Obama. He doesn't abandon his allies. See, Obama has no allies. He'll throw anyone overboard. Anyone around Obama better be careful. They could be thrown under the bus at any minute. And that includes nations. He threw Israel under the bus. But apparently Putin doesn't throw his allies under the bus. That's all. So here we are, where the rubber meets the rogue. And now here we are. It's hour number three of the Savage Nation. The news keeps changing. The world's changing. The tidal wave is coming. I told you don't run from the tidal wave because they'll guarantee to catch you. The only thing you can do is run into the tidal wave and try to get under it and through it before it smashes down upon you. It's an interesting analogy, by the way. I tell people not to worry because you can't change it anyway. I mean, I love the rally in Washington today by Donald Trump and Ted Cruz against the Iran deal. It was a spirited, important meeting. It made a point. It was useful. Certain observations can be made. They knew that they couldn't change the course of events because Obama doesn't respect the Constitution. Obama manipulates the laws of the land and the Constitution, goes around the will of the people, goes around the will of Congress, and uses technicalities to override the will of the people and do a deal with Iran. But it was a nice point that they made. Trump looked more presidential than ever, and Cruz looked like a water boy. Cruz appears with a white shirt, and Donald always appears in a suit. That's a little lesson to you out there if you want to be in politics. Always wear a suit and tie, look like a president. Don't look like a Schmendrick who just jumped up on the stage like a groupie. Cruz looked like a groupie next to him. The Tea Party picked Cruz, and then Cruz invited Trump. Well, I would say it was very good of Cruz. However, didn't work out for him very well. Congratulations on the rally. It was very important message. Now you can all put pictures of yourself up on Breitbart and, like Zelig, appear everywhere else, but it has no meaning whatsoever. Now let's go to the callers on my show, my audience. All that matters to me is my show and my audience. And again, I want you to understand something. If you get on the radio with me, I know that I have a way of connecting with an audience where they think they know me and that I'm their friend. Well, unfortunately, that's not true. You have to understand radio is a very unique medium. And there's ratings and whatnot. And I'll explain it again. There's a rating metric called an AQH, every quarter, average quarter hour. I want you to envision the largest football stadium in America. Now, I want you to envision an audience three times or four times larger than that football stadium. And that's what's listening to you as you speak on the show. So try to back off for a minute. Don't get intimidated. Just imagine you're coming before a microphone before hundreds of thousands of people to debate me or say something. Because that's what I do every second that I am on the radio, 3 hours a day. It's not easy to do, but go ahead, take your best shot. Go for it. And I'm not here to challenge you. I really want to hear people who have intelligent things to say. But try to remember you're not talking to me alone. You're talking to this quadruple football stadium out there. People listen to you. B.O.B., Tim, go ahead. Jacksonville, you're on the Savage Nation. What's on your mind, Tim?
Well, hi. What I'm thinking is that sometimes I feel as though we forget that, you know, there's more than three countries in the world, America, Israel, and Iran. And you made a very good point a couple minutes ago. Muslims don't play well with their neighbors historically.
Especially, yeah, and so what is your main point, Tim?
Is that the point is, we don't have to always get involved in this. If Iran gets their nuclear weapon, like everybody's worried they're going to do, they're not going to use it on us. They're not going to use it on Israel. They know the second they do that, while we might tolerate an attack on Israel, a nuclear attack on another nation, I honestly do not believe will ever be tolerated, especially not on us. And as much as the Iranians like to pretend they're martyrs, they don't want to lose their power. They're going to go after their fellow...
But, Tim, here's the problem. You're thinking as in a rational Western manner. You don't quite understand who's running Iran, I don't think, Tim. These are medieval... Neolithic throwbacks who have an apocalyptic view of Islam that is a perversion of Islam, and they don't believe there can be world peace in the return of their Messiah, who they call the Mehdi, until there is world war. Do you know that?
Oh, yes, I know that. And who are they?
So, in other words, these Neolithics, who Obama seems to embrace, these Neolithics actually want a world war because that's their apocalyptic vision that must occur in order for their Messiah, their Jesus, to come back to earth.
in the Middle East. And do you really think the Arabs, the Jordanians, the Iraqis, the Pakistanis, you think they're just going to sit back and wait for us to come in and save the day?
Well, yes, they will. Because right now, they're doing very little. They can't even stop ISIS. How are they going to stop Iran? Think about it. Jordan and Egypt have been fighting ISIS now for a year with air power, and they've gotten nowhere. ISIS has gotten bigger. So what are they going to do against a major nation like Iran?
I feel as though they're not really giving their best effort. They quite frankly, expect that we're going to come in and save the day. And even assuming they start conquering the Middle East, what's going to happen? They're going to reform the Persian Empire? The EU is not going to be happy with a new Ottoman state sitting right there to the south.
And what is the EU of child molesters going to do about it? The EU that's more concerned with sexual things and assisted suicide than with things going on in the Middle East. You think the EU cares about human dignity and human life? They've done nothing about the trafficking in young girls that ISIS is conducting. So why would you think the EU will do anything? They're a paper tiger. They have no military. There is no military that the EU controls, is there?
They're a bunch of cowards.
All right, so I've made my point. No, the EU will do nothing. They're worthless. Nothing. All they're concerned about are things that have no significance whatsoever. Global warming, you know, homophobia. That's their issues. That's their issues. So, okay, 855-407-282. Russian military intervene in Syria. That's all. Russia went around the threats of John Ketchup Kerry. They said, don't you dare fly into Syria. They did it anyway. They went into Syria via Iraq and Iran. And they landed some troops, heavy equipment, circumventing the strong U.S. pressure on Turkey, Greece, Bulgaria, and Cyprus to close their airspace to Russian shipments. But guess what? Russia made up its mind. So what is Washington now going to do? Tell me what they're going to do. Tell me what Obama's game is now. Now that the rubber of Russian transports have met the rogue president of the United States of America. Tell me what's going to happen right now. Heavy Russian transports were flying right over parts of Iraq. Right over parts of Iraq where U.S. forces are on the ground for guiding U.S. airstrikes against ISIS. They're sitting there on the ground. And we have spotter planes in the air. We have drones in the plane. And as a result of the Russians flying over northern Iraq, the U.S. military has slowed down their little fake war against ISIS because they're afraid of an accident in the sky. That's number two. This is a big deal. A very, very big deal. And what did Kerry do? Kerry threatened Russia. First time since 1973 that there's been a threat. Since the 1973 Yom Kippur War, we have not heard of the United States and Russia rattling sabers against each other. That's because we have lunatics, communist lunatics, university types, a sorority I call them, running America. This, by the way, I cover in an entire chapter in my forthcoming and last nonfiction book, Government Zero. Think about why I called it Government Zero. Why did I entitle this new great book, my last nonfiction political book, Government Zero? What does it mean? Think about the title. On the face of it, a bell goes off and you say, Government Zero. Are you telling me we have a government of the people, by the people, and for the people? Are you telling me we have borders, language, and culture? No, we have Government Zero. We have a dictatorship. Now you get it? I'll be back to give you more insights right here on the Savage Nation.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com. Here's a big headline. Russia has defied the U.S. ban, is flying troops into Syria via Iran. It marks the first Russian-U.S. showdown over Syria. There's a huge, rapid military buildup on behalf of Assad, who Obama has been trying to overthrow for years now. And here's a little other one for you, if you think the Russians are faking it. They're not John Kerry. Okay? The world's largest submarine with nuclear warheads, the Dmitry Donskoy, NATO-coded Typhoon, is sailing towards Syria. And aboard the Russian submarine are 20 ICBMs, each carrying 6 to 10 MIRV nuclear warheads. This is where the rubber meets the rogue president. Obama cannot bamboozle Putin the way he has bamboozled the drunk Boehner. I mean, maybe Obama thinks that, you know, they have blue eyes, so they're the same. Maybe Obama confuses John Boehner swilling the whiskey in the closet with what he heard about Putin. But make no mistake about it, this is where the rubber of the Russian transports squealing as they land on the tarmac in Syria meet the rogue president. I can tell you right now, this is not good for the world. You know, we used to see signs back in the 70s, and nuclear war is not good for children and other living things. Where'd all those grandmas go? Where'd they all go? There's something afoot here in this world right now, something almost biblical in magnitude. The worst sandstorm in 15 years is occurring in Israel right now. It's grounded all Israeli internal flights. Let's think about this. It's biblical. It's like God has thrown the dust in the eyes of the Jews. The worst sandstorm in 15 years. Flaring up. Stopping all Israeli internal flights. The Jews go about their business like nothing's going to change. Meanwhile, the friend of Obama, Khamenei, says Israel will not exist in 25 years. And then spits on the U.S. saying U.S. is the great Satan. This is who he's doing a deal with now. 20% of the American people support the deal. 80% oppose it. Congress opposes it. But the dictator in the White House is going around the people and Congress because he believes he's a pharaonic image. After 2 year siege, rebels conquer a Syrian airbase in Idlib. 2 years ISIS fought to take over that airbase, and they just won. That's why Russia is suddenly in there, because they know that if they don't move in now, Assad will fall and all hell will break loose. So they're there. And by the way, Iran is there with them. Isn't that interesting? Russia and Iran, why not, want Assad to stay and do not want ISIS to win. Now do you understand why Obama has done nothing against ISIS? Does it finally come together for you, which I've been telling you now for 3 months, that ISIS is Obama's proxy army? Anyone put two and two together? Government zero?
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE. Savage.
So the president of the United States has devalued the United States military to such a point that now Russia has the largest nuclear submarine in the world. And I'm going to tell you a little bit more about that in a minute, because it's on the way to Syria. In fact, it's almost there. It's in Syrian. It's on the way to Syrian territorial waters. The largest nuclear submarine in the world, Dmitry Donskoy, and it crossed the Dardanelles Strait on Wednesday, today, on its way to Syrian waters. Listen to this very carefully if you think it's a joke. It's the world's largest nuclear submarine. It's accompanied by two anti-submarine warfare carriers, and it carries 20 intercontinental ballistic missiles and up to 200 nuclear weapons. Putin is not Boehner. Now, they may both have blue eyes, and Obama may think that they're both drunks, and he can push them around. And here's another little something for those of you who think you know everything. Even the smart Israelis were shocked this morning that the submarine already reached the strategic strait, the Dardanelles Strait, linking the Black Sea to the Mediterranean, because it only departed from its northern base September 4th, 5 days ago. The Israelis and other Middle Eastern military experts estimated that this Russian sub would need at least 10 days to reach the Middle East, but it got there in five. So what else do they have wrong about the Russian military? So it's twice as fast as they estimated? What else do they not know that is going on? Well, I don't know. We'll find out soon enough. I know this. We're in the worst state with Russia that we've been since 1973 because of this monster in the White House who gets everything wrong. I don't blame him entirely. You got the idiot Susan Rice, the bumbler Susan Rice. You got the others in the White House, the sorority girls who should have been thrown out a long time ago. But we don't have a Congress. If we had a Congress, there would have been hearings to throw them out for what they've done already. Then you got Hillary Clinton. They're asking you tough questions about emails, you hear? Instead of asking you what she had to do with the humanitarian crisis that has engulfed the world, they ask her about the emails. It's throwing sand in our eyes. Now you understand why? People say, why is ABC being so tough? I heard a talk show host this morning who considers himself a genius. So, oh my, he was shocked that the mainstream media is attacking Hillary now. Wow, he was just stunned. Well, he fell for it too. He was cheering on that they were attacking Hillary Clinton for the email scandal. He thought that, wow, man, finally, they're against her. He didn't see beyond his own two eyes. The reason they're against her is because they're for her, because they didn't ask her the real question, which is, do you take any responsibility for the humanitarian crisis that is engulfing the whole world? That would have been the question to ask. So instead they focus on the email scandals. It's the same with Bill Clinton. Why do you think they focused on Monica Lewinsky? Because they didn't want to focus on the war that he was brewing. Do you understand? Remember I told you that years ago. I was here on radio then. I know how the game is played by these guys. I know how the drug addicts in the media do their game. I get it. When they, just when you think that they're against your political enemy, they're for your political enemy. They're just throwing dust in your eyes. Okay, next, let's go to some callers in the last 20 minutes of the Savage Nation. Marty on WFTL, what's on your mind, Marty?
Hey, doctor, I got a question for you. This whole thing about Hillary, first of all, what does responsibility mean? That's number one. Number two, would Iran really drop a nuke on the Dome of the Rock to destroy Israel?
Well, you're looking at it the wrong way. Iran just today said, Khamenei, the worst of them, the most Neolithic of them all, said Israel will not exist in 25 years. And of course they would use a nuke on Israel, but they wouldn't bomb Jerusalem because it has some Islamic holy sites, such as the Dome of the Rock. But they would bomb Tel Aviv, wouldn't they?
Yeah, they would. However, Israel is...
Let's not do a however. Your question was set up to be rhetorical, meaning, of course, we shouldn't worry about Iran getting a nuke because they wouldn't use it on Israel, because they wouldn't want to destroy Islamic holy sites. But I just gave you the answer. There are no Islamic holy sites in Tel Aviv.
Gotcha. But still, I mean, you know, Israel is...
All right, thanks for the call. That's all. We're not schmoozing in a deli over a little bagel with a toothpick now, with a little cream cheese and a mustache. No. National radio... Figure three football stadiums are listening to you, so we can't go with the toothpicks now. With a bagel and a schmear. With a little poppy seed in the tooth. 855-400-7282. Let's go to WTMA in South Carolina. Michael, welcome to the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Hi. ISIS is just a plague and a cancer on this planet. It needs to be removed. Our president has had chances to have build coalitions with other countries, Japan, et cetera, that have witnessed extreme terrorism they've done, and they're not doing it. I think Russia...
You're making a mistake again, though. If you listen to the show, I've told you that ISIS is Obama's proxy army to overthrow Assad. Obama has a vendetta against Assad that goes on for years now. And ISIS, the reason the U.S. is not really doing anything is because they're our proxy army. And the U.S. is looking the other way about the collateral damage. So long as they overthrow Assad, Obama's willing to look the other way about the rapes, the kidnapping, and the slavery.
It's ridiculous. And we could overthrow Assad, we overthrew Gaddafi. Look at the chaos that created. I think Russia...
Well, you're a regular listener. Okay, it's headache territory now already at 40 minutes into the third hour. When you start hearing your own show come back at you, it's Migraineville. Let's move on, 855-400-728. Of course, I told you the story about Gaddafi 1,000 times. Who killed Gaddafi? Who joked about Gaddafi? Robert, do you have the famous Hillary tape? But don't play it yet. Gaddafi was a monster, just as Assad is a monster. But Gaddafi was a monster who knew how to control the other monsters. He knew what to do with them. He didn't worry about waterboarding. He cut their heads off, and he kept them in line, that's all. He knew the neighborhood he was in. They didn't care about the Geneva Convention. They followed the Libyan Convention, which is you try to overthrow me, I'll cut your head off and blow your village up. So that's how Gaddafi kept the peace in his own country. And he warned Hillary, and he warned all of them. He said, if you kill me after I am gone, this country will descend into warlords running the country, very much along the lines of Somalia. That's exactly what Hillary has wrought. So they surrounded Gaddafi with the, again, Arab Spring mentality. They thought that there'd be peace reigning in the streets of Libya, and now we have a refugee crisis unlike anything seen since World War II, because what they did to Gaddafi, they're trying to do to Assad. Hillary Clinton again. Susan Rice again. Basically war criminals for what they're doing. No, if there was a Hague, a real Hague, that wasn't run by their girlfriends? They're all one and the same. They all belong to the same Klavan. You have the soundbite? Robert, yes or no? Yeah. Okay, here's Hillary Clinton after they killed Gaddafi. Listen carefully.
We came, we saw, he died.
You hear the sorority of the Klavan there? We came, we saw, he died. The girls had fun. They killed a bad man. Not thinking beyond killing a man. Look what they created. Now they want to do the same thing in Syria. They know that you think they're that smart, don't you? You don't understand that some of the most powerful people on earth could be idiots. Okay, let's keep moving on. Michelle, KSFO, San Francisco. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi. The masks off now. We can see the Russian-Iranian alliance that Obama has facilitated. He has been up to his neck in this. The prize is the Gulf oil. With Saudi Arabia and the Emirates eliminated, think of the oil that Russia and Iran will control. Obama doesn't give a damn about Assad. He could go the way of Gaddafi or anybody else. He's just another guy to be gone. And that's what the prize is, because think of the oil. Think of the money that they were control. Think about the... It's just like the great game there with Russia. Right. And
so you think that once... you think that Russia and Iran will take on Saudi Arabia?
They don't really give a damn about Israel. All they
Ma'am, listen to me. Are you implying that Russia and Iran will join in a military exercise against Saudi Arabia to take over their oil?
Why not? Saddam Hussein almost...
Well, now you're asking me... I asked you a question. Yes or no? Is that what you're suggesting?
Yes, that Russia and Iran are forming an alliance to take over the Gulf oil states.
Okay, well, let me give you a little fact that you may not or may be aware of. I don't know how deeply embedded you are in this knowledge. But there's a new army, a Hashemite army, getting ready to battle against ISIS. And it is a new army of 70,000 men. It's a Saudi army. And here's the strange part. It's King Abdullah who built this new Hashemite army of 70,000. And guess which armaments they're using? U.S. armaments. So which side is Obama really on? And is it the military-industrial complex at work again, wanting another war in order to speed up an arms race?
Exactly right. And that's why Obama, now we know what he was making his little agreements with Putin when he gets reelected. I'll have more wiggle room to do this, because it's got to be an alliance because of the way that Obama has been handling this whole mess over there.
Well, I don't agree with you, because U.S. has been very, very loud, and I mean over the last few days, to not fly into Syria against Russia. You know that, right?
Right. Well,
and today Russia has gone around these U.S. threats and flown troops to Syria via Iran. They went into Iran, into Syria, despite what Obama told them and what Kerry said. So you're implying that Obama and Kerry were just faking it? They really want Russia in Syria?
I think
that... How does that make sense? How does that make sense, what you just said? Obama has been crowing for years that Assad will go, will go, will go, will go. Assad must go, must go, must go. He's done everything he can to undermine Assad. He's even funded ISIS, and he has also not taken on ISIS. He has let ISIS rampage right up to Assad's palace doors. So now you're telling me that secretly Obama is backing who? Who is he backing? Is he backing ISIS? Is he backing Assad? Is he backing Russia? Or is he backing Iran? Does he not know what he's doing? Are these people that stupid? The girls who run this country, are they that dumb that they don't know what they're doing?
Yeah.
I'll let you think about it. It could be Susan Rice is a moron. It could be that Susan Rice couldn't work a cash register in a Target store. That's what it could be. It could be these girls are complete morons, just vicious morons, who have created a mess that the world hasn't seen in 50 years. 70 years, for that matter, since World War II. Yeah. But meanwhile, just write down what I said. Now we know we're in a new place now where the rubber meets the rogue. I like that. I keep using it. I like those words. What do I mean now we have a new place where the rubber meets the rogue? Michael Savage said the rubber meets the rogue. It means the rubber of the monster Russian transports that are landing in Syria right now to back Assad. Now meet the rogue president called Barack Obama, who's gotten away with murder because he thinks that Putin will back down the way that Boehner backed down. Because Obama thinks that since they both have blue eyes, they're both drunks and can be bamboozled. That's not a bad paragraph. Put it on YouTube. That's pretty good. I'm sure the sorority figures, you know, Putin's full of it. He's just like Boehner. They both have blue eyes. They're both drunks. Never mind the airplanes and the nuclear submarine. We'll show him. We just beat everyone in America. We go around Congress. We got Obamacare through. We can spy on everyone. We can do anything we want. We'll push Putin around, too. We'll show him. We'll show him those tough gals in the White House. See? See how far they've gotten? Well, let's see how far they get now. Okay, my friends, we're moving into the last few minutes of the show. I'm going to take a call, then we're going to take a break, then we're going to come back for the latest breaking news of this crazy world of ours. Russia ducks U.S. ban flying troops and equipment into Syria via Iran. Over air routes to Syria, marking the first serious Russian-U.S. showdown over Syria and Moscow's rapidly ongoing military buildup on behalf of Assad, the very man that Obama has had a vendetta against for years he has wanted to overthrow Assad. He learned nothing about what he did to Gaddafi, doing it again. And if you think the Russians are bluffing, maybe you're right. All I know is that they just floated in the world's largest submarine, which has 200 nuclear warheads on it. And it got there in half the amount of time that was estimated for it to travel from the Russian seaport into the Dardanelles. The Dmitry Donskoy. 20 Bulava ICBMs carrying 6 to 10 MIRV nuclear warheads. If you think this is all a bluff, hey, maybe you're right. I hope it's a bluff. Because a nuclear war is not what anyone wants. But, you know, I've studied World War I, and I've seen it start for similar idiotic reasons. Nobody to this day can tell me why World War I actually started, other than the ego of stupid old men. In fact, I spent a large part of this weekend in L.A. We were arguing over what started World War I. From the minute our plane landed, everyone was searching the Internet to find the reasons for World War I, and nobody could find the real reason for it. Assassination of Archduke Ferdinand. I knew he was the Archduke of Austro-Hungary. That I knew. I remembered it from high school. A Serbian national killed him. So that gave Germany the pretext to invade Serbia. What happened then? Russia moved in to defend its ally Serbia, and that's how World War I began. Do you understand what I just said to you? Do you see history repeating itself? This dumb moron administration of ours is liable to trigger World War III. I'll be back, be here, be nowhere.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Hey, our Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com, the only company I trust for wealth insurance, gold and silver. Call 800-BUY-COIN. So just yesterday, the great geniuses at the New York Times reported that the United States is moving to block Russian military buildup in Syria. Now today we find out the military built up in Syria. And everything that the girls figured out over a pizza at the White House, Russia went around. The sorority that runs Obama's White House, and they can't fly in there. Are we going to block them from Bulgarian airspace? They flew in through Iran and Iraq right into Syria. And they're there now. And they're not backing down and they're not blinking. And what the long-term goal here is not that easy to understand. We know that Obama wants Assad gone. And we know that Putin wants Assad to stand as the best chance he has to defend against radical Islamism from appearing again in Russia. Meanwhile, the Russians built housing for 1,000 personnel. The largest nuclear submarine in the world has crossed the Dardanelles. 2 giant Russian Condor transport planes bringing in supplies and equipment for an air base in southern Russia across Iran and Iraq to Latakia. So no matter what John Ketchup Kerry can get away with the drunk Boehner, I guess they figure, as I said, Putin has blue eyes, Boehner has blue eyes, and they figure they're both drunks. Well, Mr. Kerry, let me tell you this about Putin. You know nothing about Putin. He's not John Boehner. This is the Savage Nation. Be here or be nowhere. I'll be back tomorrow with God's will and your listenership. Be here.